Hi, today is June 7th, 2020. This is Mobius Podcast 329. I'm Todd Ocasio-Ord, my good friend John Westfall. And we are back after missing 1 week's of podcast because all kinds of stuff. So some of this news is old, but it's not. I found it interesting, so I thought I'd still want to talk about it. And John's got his R tip of the week. Hey, John,
I also...
we're like a month away from your book, right? Or 2 months?
We should be getting pretty close. I should be getting proofs in the next couple of weeks or so. The other thing I did not put on our show notes is that I have sitting over here an interesting box with a Google Nest Mini in it that I got for free as a YouTube Pro subscriber. So it's probably the only technology I've ever received and not immediately opened because it was one of those things of, we'll give it to you for free with shipping. And I said, sure, why not? And now I have no idea what I'm going to use it for. So maybe we can talk a little bit about what I could use this thing.
We will put that on after your R tip of the week, Google Nest Mini. Okay. All righty. You might go back to the Google Fold.
Never know. All right.
Okay. First things first. Okay. So there, a couple of weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, a podcast or a week and a half ago, maybe, the Raspberry Pi people released a new version of the Pi 4. So it's still the Pi 4. It's not a Pi 5. But the difference is that it is a 64-bit version of Raspbian OS that comes with it, which allows it to work with the new Raspberry Pi 4 that has 8 gigs of RAM instead of 4. You know, because you can't address more than, 3.6 gigs of RAM or 4 gigs of RAM with a 32-bit OS. So anyway, and they changed the name of Raspbian OS to the now easier to pronounce, in my opinion, Raspberry Pi OS. So if you've got, if you update to the 64-bit, and you should be able to run the 64-bit in a 4-gigabyte machine. It's just, now if you have the new 8-gigabyte Raspberry Pi 4, you can address all 8 gigabytes. Anyway, Raspberry Pi OS. I haven't really looked to see what's new in it, aside from addressing more memory, but I still haven't. You remember that Crow Pi I ordered? I still haven't played with it.
Yep.
I mean, I booted it up. It works.
It's cool, and you just have to find some time to sit down and play with it and find some cool things to build. You know, think about here's my suggestion. Go through old movies from the 60s, 70s, 80s when there were, you know, the computer that controlled the launch sequence or the – you know, this or that, find some of those iconic computer devices and try to build them on the Crow Pi and see if you can make something that is convincingly similar using your Crow Pi.
Well, you know, for those who don't know, the Crow Pi is a Raspberry Pi 4 sitting in a you know, pre-constructed mini suitcase with all the trimmings. It's got a touch screen and, you know, all kinds of good stuff. It comes with an external Bluetooth keyboard, an external Bluetooth mouse, and all the I/O you can shake a stick at, and including LED countdown timers and all kinds of stuff. So even not doing any projects, just out of the box, it looks like, you know, TSA would like take you aside and question you for hours if you tried to take that through the airport. So it's a really fun thing. I'll post a photo of it, I think, before for this podcast. But yeah, that's a good idea. In fact, I was thinking of doing a countdown timer just to scare people. You know, hey, look at my toy, and it's counting down from, you know, 99 or something. No, you don't want to do that too often. That will scare too many people. Next thing, which something that I read, I said, oh wow, that was my problem. So I saw in Phone Arena and a few other places that the iPad Pro, and there's a couple of models, not just one I have, the iPad Pro 11 2020 version, but there's something called the iPad Pro boot loop problem, where the iPad Pro would spontaneously reboot, and John may kind of scratch his beard and say, you know, didn't Todd talk about that endlessly for like 3 weeks? And it sounds like that's what was happening to me. It's called a boot loop, and so it just sort of shuts down and restarts all of a sudden, all by itself. And I'm happy to say that the replacement iPad that Apple sent me does not have that problem so far, knock on wood. And but I wish I hadn't had to use one of my AppleCare incidents on it, an AppleCare Plus incidents. It seems like if it's a known problem, they shouldn't require an incident on it. I might call them on that. any rate, so if you are, if your iPad Pro is just rebooting all by itself every now and then for no apparent reason, regardless of which app you're in, or maybe you're not, you're sitting at the home screen, which happened to me many times, give Apple support a call and tell them you may have a boot loop problem. So in a way, I'm glad I'm not the only one. And now I think I may call and say, hey, can I have my incident back? Because this was your fault, not mine.
Yeah, not a bad idea to try to pull it and see.
Yeah. Next item. And by the way, I think this might be a short podcast, but we'll see. Next item came up. There's a whole bunch of new or updated Google apps for Android that are released from Google in the last couple of weeks. And some of them are pretty interesting. I can't say I've tested many of them, or, you know, just tested one or two. The first one up is the personal safety app, and I have to go check if I actually installed it. But the personal safety app does a bunch of things, but one of the new things it does is crash detection, car crash detection in particular. Because as folks may know, your phone, regardless of its iPhone or Android, most modern phones these days have some kind of accelerometer on it. So I assume that it uses accelerometer to detect a sudden stop from a, you know, relatively high speed. And it can do things like notify somebody if a crash has been detected. It does say that this enhancement is in more locations, so it's not everywhere. I'm not sure if it's available where I am, for example. So need to go check on that. The other one I found also very interesting as an aging person, and that's a sound amplifier, which Google says clarifies the sound around you and now works with Bluetooth headphones. So basically it's a hearing aid, sounds like to me. And the interesting thing is, you know, I was going to say a cheap hearing aid, and he said, well, Todd, you know, my phone is not cheap. I paid hundreds and hundreds of dollars. If you have ever priced hearing aids, and I have for my parents, it is thousands of dollars for a decent set of hearing aids these days. So not to mention, you know, the cost of an audiologist and all that stuff. So if you can do it on your phone, that is cheap, assuming you already have a phone and you're not buying it just for this. The other one is an enhancement for the Google Recorder. So what the Google Recorder does is pretty much, it sounds like you record sound, right? But the new feature that emerged a couple of months ago, I want to say, maybe 4 months ago, is that it can transcribe what you're seeing and then save it to Google Docs. So Google Google Transcribe, which is a similar Google program, could always do the transcription part, but it didn't save the text. So that's pretty interesting. And apparently you can use Google Assistant to say, you know, hey, Google, to start and stop a recording. I've not tried that. I'm going to. So that's kind of cool. You know, you could be, you know, talking to someone. You could just tell your assistant, hey, record what we're saying here right now, you know, for my notes, so I can go back to my office. And that assumes you actually talk to human beings in person anymore. And then there's digital well-being, which has new bedtime mode features. I've not tried that. Google, you know, I've been telling John for like a year, hey, let's test it. And we never get around to it because there's not a real need for it. But Google Duo can now have video calls up to 12 people, which doesn't sound like much. But, you know, Google Duo started with just 2 people. So that is an improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And it says you can also have video and voice messages to the group, which is kind of cool. We should maybe try that with some of our friends. Might be interesting. And finally, oh, the app I mentioned above when I was talking about Google Recorder, Live Transcribe itself was updated. So, and this is interesting. It can be set to vibrate when somebody says your name.
Hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, that's, John probably knows what's, you know, there is a phenomenon that in a, you know, the cocktail party effect.
Yep.
So In the cocktail party effect, you know, you've got a relatively loud ambient sound around you, but you can hear your name. If somebody says, you know, John, not too loud, but in the party, you'll tend to pick up on it and turn your head. The other related version for parents is that if you're a dad or if you're a mom, if you hear dad or mom, you'll turn your head. I did that for years, even after my daughter was an adult. But it is a corollary to the cocktail party effect where you hear that word. Anyway, yeah, so if Live Transcribe hears your name, and I don't know how close it has to be, it'll vibrate your phone. So you'll know somebody's saying your name and maybe talking to you or about you or both.
one of those things when you have your phone recording and you figure I can just zone out and no one will, you know, pay attention. And then your phone vibrates and you go, oh, someone called my name. I better look up and say something. So before someone else taps you on the shoulder, it taps you.
Right. So anyway, a couple of cool updates for phone apps. You know, and I should note that I was telling a coworker about Google Recorder, I think, because one of his children has a hearing impairment and thought that might be useful for the child. You know, if somebody says the name, that it would alert the child. But it turns out that I think it's only for Pixel phones. So if you have, you know, a Samsung, which my friend does, it doesn't even appear in the App Store for you. So Google is being very stingy with some of their apps. You have to have a Google-branded Pixel phone for some of these apps, it appears. And Google Recorder is one of them. Or Transcribe is one of them. Oh, and my Google Assistant is just, hey, Google, stop. That's the other thing, you know. We're going to talk about the Google Nest Mini that John just got later. Google is not real discriminatory on how you speak to it. Basically, anything with the okay or hey, followed by a hard consonant vowel, it doesn't have to be the word Google, will work. So,
what you're saying is, hey, noodle will probably work.
It might. The consonants in noodle might not. Well, let's try it. Hey, noodle. Nah, it doesn't work.
Not that tasty.
Yeah. And it, I think it has to be the same consonant. So if I say, oh, here's one I know.
Noodle.
Hey, Coco, what time is it? Oh, that's funny. It activated but didn't say anything. Hey, Coco, what time is it? It's being
will not answer to other names. It'll listen, but it will not.
Yeah, I wonder why. Well, I'll play with it later. At any rate, so you have something. That's pretty much all I have. So you have something about a new product.
Let's talk about product. Since we're on the Google stuff, let's talk about this Nest Mini. So
okay.
I bought it. I said, you know, I mean, technically I got a coupon that had, you know, free Google Nest Mini plus free shipping. So $49.99. I went on YouTube one day and it just popped up and said, hey, we want to send you a free Google Nest Mini. And I thought, well, I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but sure. So I got it this week. And here's what I'm trying to figure out. So I have in my house right now an Amazon Echo, Echo Dot.
Yep.
I use it primarily to turn on and off some lights. I have another device, a Sonos One speaker that has Amazon Echo built into it.
Okay.
I don't really use it that often for anything. I have Siri, obviously, on all of my Apple devices. Use it maybe once a week. For something, you know, just now I'm not a very, you know, personal assistant sort of person. So now I've got this Google Nest Mini, and, you know, it can do all the things that you would expect. It can do YouTube music and calendar and maps. And I do use Google Calendar for my personal calendar still, and I use Google Maps and I use all those things. And I assume it should be able to hook up to my lights and everything because they all use apps that are fairly well supported by both Amazon, Google, and Apple. So I'm not sure what I want to do with it. I don't know if I want to put it somewhere in the house. Now, I live in an apartment that's pretty small, so anywhere I'm at, usually Alexa can already hear me, just like she just didn't activate it. Or I could take it to work. I haven't thought about where it might go, but it might be useful in one of my offices at work if I ever go back to my offices. But I'm curious, as someone who has a Google device, what your suggestions would be that I do with this thing, other than, you know, chuck it at someone or give it away or, you know, those things.
Well, you know, I have my Google Home Mini, or Google Nest Mini, I guess is the new name. My Google Nest Mini was replaced by Lenovo's smart display about a year or so ago. And so I don't use mine much either. And I also got a free one because I think my Google Smart Assistant came with a Google Nest Mini. But I will tell you what I use the Google Smart Assistant for and what I don't use it for. So first I'll start what I don't use it for. I don't use it for weather because its weather forecast is totally bogus. It is not even close to what's happening around me, and I don't know what that problem is. And I'm comparing it to pretty much everything else. The other difference between you and me is I have a Google Play account, which you don't. If you did, the music and podcasts and all that work really great with any Google, Nest or Smart Assistant device. One thing I will say that is pretty good is its news. I really like its news feature better than Amazon's Echo sort of preset news. I mean, I know you can get all kinds of news, but when you say, hey, what's her name? Give me the news. It's got a couple of things you can select from using the Google, I mean the A app, but that's pretty much it. I found that did you say something like, hey Google, show me tech news. Okay, Google, stop. So in my case, if it has video, it also shows me video. But of course, on the mini, there's no video output, so it won't do that. So I really like the news feature and the ability to target categories of news. Like I said, if you have a Google Play account, it really makes a lot more sense. Kind of like I think the Echo is a lot better if you have an Amazon Music account, which I don't. And you have, I assume you have like a iTunes Match or one of those kind of Apple Music accounts. So if you do Siri, probably is a lot better for that.
Yeah, and I do have a Google Play account somewhere from years ago, but I have not used it any time recently. So I will do something with this thing. It might end up in one of my offices as a
Yeah.
kind of play device to play some music in the background or something like that. But it's an interesting promotion. I commend Google for really getting that aggressive to get these things out there because I do want to play with it now, and I would have never probably bought it on my own since I'm not, aside from it's ironic. I have a bunch of Google Apps installations that I'm an admin for, but I don't use, and I use Google Apps for all my personal Gmail and calendar and all that. But I'm not heavy into the Google ecosystem these days. So it's a fun little toy to play with and go from there.
Yeah. I have an Amazon Echo Show 5 and a Lenovo Smart Assistant sitting about, I'm going to say about 8 feet apart, and I use them for different things. It's interesting. At whatever weather source Amazon is using, it's way more accurate than whatever Google's using. I think Google is using AccuWeather. Not sure what Amazon is using. And it won't tell me when I ask. So there's that. I really like the Amazon Echo's Good Morning feature. I don't know if it, does Google have a, hey Google, good morning.
28 a.m. now in Honolulu, it's 77 degrees and partly cloudy.
No, it's not. It's
Today, it will be
82.6,
partly
but
cloudy
okay.
with a forecasted high of 81 and a low of 72.
Yeah, it's like I said, the weather is bogus.
Right
And then,
now in Honolulu, from CNN News briefing at
oh,
1:29 p.m. on May
the Echo
24th,
started talking. Hey
surrounding
Google,
ooh.
stop. Alexa, stop. At any rate. Sometimes the Echo gets jealous if you talk to the Google Assistant more. And I told you might recall the story when I was talking to, gosh, I can't remember which way it went. I was asking a question of one of them, and the other said, "Hey, I can answer questions too." Yeah.
They're just jealous sometimes. Very jealous.
Anyway. Anyway, so surprisingly, even though I use my Google Assistant a lot, I really, without Google Play, I can't really say much about it. Yeah, it really, like you said, what like you kind of implied earlier, it really, depends on which ecosystem you're tuned into. Even Siri, which I think is the least competent, I almost said a bad word, the least competent of the various smart assistants is, more useful to a person if they have, Apple Music account, for example.
Well, we shall see. I will keep people updated on what I end up doing with my Nest Mini.
Okie dokie. See if you can tie it in with R and it can do like R.
Ooh, I could. So I have a quick story before the R tip.
Okay.
One of the things I mentioned in a previous podcast was that I was ordering some of these health gadgets, and one
Yes.
of them that I received was what you called the giant kazoo, this Lumen analyzer, breath analyzer. So you blow into it, and actually you inhale into it, and then you blow out through it, and it's a very sort of interesting thing. And I played with it for about 6 days or so,
Okay.
and I'll tell you why I'm not playing with it right now. So about you get this device, you do a calibration day with it, and then you can take breaths throughout the day. And it was really interesting. You know, it told me basically it has you eat a bunch of carbs on your first day so that it knows that you are burning carbs for sure, because it just had you load up a bunch of them. And then it slowly, you know, tells you when you start to move to fat. And I had gotten there after about 4 or 5 days. I had finally started burning fat instead of carbs. And on Monday night of last week, I was sitting doing a nightly reading with it. And you have to take, you know, the process is a little intense. You know, you inhale a very deep breath, you hold it for 10 seconds, and then you exhale it through the device. You inhale through the device, then you exhale through the device at a steady speed. So, and usually it asks you to do 2 or 3 of those readings before it, you know, just for reliability to know what it's calculating. So I was trying to do that, and the app on my phone kept glitching. It kept going back and forth into different screens. And I thought, well, you know, this must be an app issue. It's probably a software issue that's just kind of bizarre at this point. So I didn't think much of it. I finally got a reading taken. The next morning, I did my morning reading. It was perfectly fine. I went out for a walk. I came back, and in my inbox was an email from Lumen Tech Support. So this is rare, right? You know, you don't normally have tech support contact you. You usually contact them.
Yeah.
So I opened the email, and the email reads, "Hi, John. We hope that you're enjoying your Lumen experience. Our data teams have detected an intermittent abnormality with your Lumen, and in order for you to continue having the best experience possible, we would really like to replace your Lumen for you.
Wow.
We apologize for the inconvenience, and we recommend you don't continue your using your current Lumen, as your results may not be accurate moving forward." So I sent them my updated shipping information. They shipped it out next day. It's sitting right now at a Cincinnati DHL hub waiting to be processed to get here within a couple of days. But I was pretty shocked by that. That's pretty good proactive customer service.
That's
where
amazing.
When they notice something is wrong, they reach out and say, "Look, we're just going to replace it because we don't want you to be frustrated by this thing."
That is amazing. And it shows this device has, you know, sending back telemetry to them that they're actually, you know, somehow analyzing on a mass scale, I assume.
Yeah. And that's something, that's a good use of telemetry in my book.
Yeah.
You know, if you use it to actually, you know, when your customers buy a very expensive product, and this was a $300 product, but, you know, then again, I've bought $300 products before that don't care at all about it. So that was my story with the Lumen. So hopefully I will have more updates on the Lumen over the next couple of weeks when I get my new one in and I go back to using it, because I was very impressed initially with it. Just with the kind of way that the app was designed and the information that it tries to provide and the goals it has. So more to come, but cool. That is an interesting update on the giant kazoo.
Yeah. See, Apple should have called me up when I had that boot loop, but anyway.
Yeah, if it sees an iPad rebooting, you know, 3 or 4 times an hour spontaneously, it probably should notice that. But
absolutely. Okay, next, John's R. I wish I had one of those radio announcer voices. John's R tip of the week.
Yes. So this is a pretty easy one, and this is one that I think if you're an R user, you sort of know at least one of these things, but you might not have thought about all 4 of them. So recoding data is something that we often have to do, whether it is taking something off of one scale and putting it in another scale, or assigning value labels to something, or in my example in the book, in a couple of cases I use, you know, recoding letter grades to GPA points, or, you know, whatever it might be. And there are a few different ways to do it in R. Probably one of the easiest, if you just have one value that you need to judge against, maybe you're doing a median split or something like that, is just use the if-else function, which is very similar to if-else in Excel. And it's actually very similar to if in Excel. But if-else can be used to do some recoding. Another one that's interesting is that R's built-in control structures can actually do some recoding if you know how to use them. So you can actually subset. What you're basically doing is you're subsetting a bit of the data structure and then assigning a new value to it. And then you can just kind of iterate through all of the different subsets and assign your values. So in my case, I was taking a value that had three values to it. One of them was only a new value because the casing was wrong. So they'd used an uppercase S in one, in some cases a lowercase s in others, and went through and recoded it to just the two values it was actually supposed to be. So you can use control structures for that, which are pretty fast, and you don't need any external libraries for that. If else is also built in, you don't need any external library for that. One of the functions, though, that I think is actually really good for readability is this recode function that's in the car library. And the reason I like it is because it's a very easy syntax for someone to follow. You know, it literally, you set up a set of recode maps. You know, one equals this, two equals this. You put a semicolon between each clause, and you... put equal signs for equals. So if you're writing a script that you're going to share with someone and you want to make it very clear what your recoding is doing, this is probably the easiest and simplest way to do that, where you won't have your reader going, I'm not quite sure what you're getting at. And finally, along that lines, is you could also write your own custom function. So I, in the book, use this as an example of how to do custom functions. So I define a new function called letter grade. Letter grade takes a percentage, and it then does the recoding based on the recoding rules. So you can imagine having a number of grades you want to recode, and you don't want to have to always recode each and every single one of them. You might just run them through this function. And then if the letter grade percentages ever change, all you have to do is upgrade the function to have the new mappings in it. You don't have to go through and redo all of them. So multiple ways, like I said, that you can mix and match to get your data exactly where you want. And I hope that most people, when they read this, go, even if they're an R expert, they go, well, gee, I always did it using control functions or control structures. And I, this is a lot easier. Or I didn't know you could do it without having to load the car package. And that's one of the things I tried to do in the book. Anywhere you could do things through multiple ways, show all of those ways so that people can mix and match.
Hey, John, what is the car package?
Car is one of the more common packages in R, and I'm trying to remember the exact what it stands for, but it is one of the oldest packages. Car is, Companion to Applied Regression. But it's got a ton of interesting stuff in it. So it's one of those packages that was originally built for a particular book, the R Companion to Applied Regression, third edition, and presumably first and second. But it has been a package that has been around for quite a number of years, and is very useful for not just the fact the things that I mentioned in recode, but also a lot of the other packages you'll see will use CAR just because of some of the user functions it has.
Okay. And the reason I ask is, A, I didn't know what it was. And B, when you kept saying CAR, I kept thinking, this shows how old I am. I kept thinking about CAR and Cutter, from Lisp. And so I thought it was some kind, I thought it was something like to pull something from a Lisp, but apparently not. All righty. So the last thing I wanted to mention is last week I had audio problems where, if you listen to the fives of you who listen to the podcast, I was really, really soft and low volume, and John sounded normal. I tried to bump up the volume a bit, and we recorded simultaneously, by the way. We don't do the fancy thing where John records with his track on his side and I record mine. We put it there. That's just way too much work. So we just record everything simultaneously on my end of the conversation. And usually I'm a little loud, and the software equalizes our volumes a bit, or normalizes our volumes a bit, and it's okay. But last week was just a disaster. I suspect it is my once reliable and trusty Yeti phone. I think it's called Blue Ice or something.
Blue Yeti. Phone.
Blue Yeti. Sorry, Blue Yeti microphone, which was a great phone. Microphone, but it's been getting a little flaky the last couple of months. So I bought an Empow Bluetooth headset. It's over-the-ear headset with a microphone, a little mini boom microphone that I'm trying this week. We'll see what it sounds like. Hopefully it's okay, at least better than last week. I will say one thing. I'm using it on a MacBook right now with Microsoft Skype for Mac OS, and we'll see how it seemed to, you know, recognize the headsets, microphone, and headphones okay, speakers okay. On a Windows 10 device, it was a mess. It has two different HIDs for the headset. One is called hands-free, and the other is just called, you know, headset. And the hands-free, I can't hear anything, so I choose the HID for just, you know, headset, and at least I can hear stuff. But the microphone will not work with Microsoft Teams at all, as far as I can tell. I tried a couple of things. I still haven't experimented with it. I need to do that. I need to basically go bother somebody and say, hey, can you just sit there? You may not hear me for a while, and, you know, see how that works. But at any rate, the microphone itself seems okay. Now that I've paired it with the MacBook, I probably have to repair it with the Windows 10 device. I don't think it does multiple devices. Like AirPods Pro, which is awesome in that respect. It'll pair multiple devices and stay paired. You just have to tell it where you're trying to talk to it from, which is great. Anyway, I really like MPOW. I've got another set of regular earbuds from them, and they work great. So I thought, well, you know. But it could be just Windows 10. Quite frankly, I've always had problems with Bluetooth and Windows. And John might recall that some of our friends say really bad words when discussing Bluetooth with anything Microsoft. So it just may be the Microsoft Bluetooth stack is still terrible, as it has been for many years. Anywho, we are back for this week. Mobley's Podcast 329, and we'll talk to you next time.